This podcast is free and it's accessible to everyone thanks to support from listeners like you. If you value this show, please consider supporting its production by donating to our home, KUOW. It only takes a minute to give, and you'll be helping to support the production of this podcast. Make a donation at kuow.org or follow the link in the show notes. And thanks.
You're listening to Soundside. I'm Diana Opong in for Libby Denkman. A new report from Cybersecurity Insiders says Microsoft's security culture needs an overhaul. This comes after multiple breaches of Microsoft systems by foreign hackers in recent years, which have allowed access to sensitive federal government email systems. It's all led to growing concern about whether the tech giant is doing enough to defend against cybersecurity threats. The recent failures are also bringing extra scrutiny to Microsoft's close relationship with the U.S. government and raising questions about whether these contracts should be subject to closer oversight. Here to talk about this is Eric Geller. Geller is a journalist covering cybersecurity and technology and the author of a Wired magazine piece on the issue titled "The U.S. Government Has a Microsoft Problem." And also with us to share his analysis is Quentin Hodgson. Hodgson is a senior researcher specializing in cybersecurity at RAND, a nonpartisan research organization. Thank you both for being here.
Thanks for having us.
My pleasure.
Before we get into current threats, let's set the stakes here. Eric, we'll start with you. You make the point that Microsoft is by far the largest supplier of technology to the U.S. government. How deeply is the company entrenched in federal government operations?
It's sort of hard to overstate how deeply they're entrenched. They're the essential provider for email, the essential provider for collaboration services. So, you know, word processing. They have just a ton of data about what's happening on government networks. And that information is really important when agencies are trying to understand if they get hacked, you know, how they got hacked, or even just trying to understand the normal activity that happens on their network. They use Microsoft for, you know, people logging in. Microsoft controls the keys to the kingdom in terms of all the user accounts, who's allowed to access what information your average employee is able to access, all that is controlled through Microsoft services.
Quentin, you were formerly the director for cyber plans, operations, and programs for the Department of Defense. Can you give us a sense of how much of the U.S. defense world relies on Microsoft products?
Similarly, most of the Department of Defense uses Microsoft products of various sorts, as Eric was just talking about, from the Office suite, you know, Excel, Word, and so forth, Outlook, the email and exchange services, but also the Azure cloud is something that DoD, in addition to other cloud service providers, uses quite ubiquitously.
So it's well used and entrenched within the government system. Eric, in your Wired reporting, you give us a timeline of recent breaches of Microsoft systems by Chinese and Russian hackers starting in 2021. What are the lowlights here? Like, what's happening?
One of the through lines that emerges when you read through the accounts of what happened here is Microsoft is, according to security experts, making some pretty basic mistakes. So these would be things like leaving open a sort of a testing account that's used to sort of just test, you know, Microsoft code development, leaving that unsecured so that a hacker can get in there. And then worse, allowing a hacker to jump from there into the actual sort of code production environment from where they were able to access senior Microsoft executives' emails and secret information that government agencies were exchanging with Microsoft for tech support purposes and things like that. That's one example of something where when I talked to security experts, they basically said, you know, a cloud provider that is really paying close attention to all the ways that things could go wrong and trying to stop those things, they would not be letting this happen. So that's one example of something. And there's many others. And I should say, we recently had a government advisory board, the Cyber Safety Review Board, release a report that confirmed a lot of what I had been hearing from my experts that I talked to for my story, just in terms of basic mistakes that were made that, you know, that left Microsoft customers open to a lot of risk.
And Quentin, can you put this into context? How serious were these breaches?
Well, it's pretty serious, especially as Eric noted that it's coming on in a series of these kinds of incidents. So he mentioned the Cyber Safety Review Board. That was something that was set up back in 2022 after the Biden administration had issued an executive order that, if you'll recall, in early 2021, just as the administration came in, was really precipitated by two significant incidents. One was the SolarWinds hack that had affected about eight or nine government agencies, as well as private sector accounts. But also there was a prior incident that was made public in the spring of 2021 involving the Microsoft Exchange server, which was eventually attributed to Chinese actors. And so this most recent report is just an indication that it's another event that has occurred. I should note, however, that to this point, we don't have any indications that this has led to compromise of any classified systems, you know, the separate networks of the Department of Defense, for example, or any of the intelligence agencies run. But it's still very concerning that particularly they were able to access, these adversaries were able to access emails of very high-ranking officials, including the Secretary of Commerce.
And Quentin, I don't want to be alarmist, but if these are attacks that we know of that were discovered, how likely are there other quieter cyber attacks that we haven't heard of or known about yet?
Well, I think it's something you certainly have to take the presumption that there are other things that are going on that we may not have come publicly to light. And I'm sure in the aftermath of all these incidents that the various government agencies have been doing a lot of hard work to try to go back through network logs, to do the forensics, to try to figure out, has anything else been taken? Have any other accounts been compromised? That's a normal procedure anyway in the aftermath of any kind of incident that may occur.
Okay. And Eric, what was the fallout from these cyber attacks? How did Microsoft and these federal agencies respond?
Well, Microsoft has responded by creating something called the Secure Future Initiative. They launched that in November to basically say, we understand that we're getting a lot of criticism for these security failures. We are going to change how we approach security. We're going to sort of batten down the hatches. We're going to make it harder, for example, to create high-level user accounts that have a lot of power inside of our company and can be abused if somebody steals them. We're going to do more scanning to see if sensitive data is moving across our network, potentially being exfiltrated from our network, taken out of our network by adversaries. We're going to make a lot of changes to try to reassure our customers that we are taking this seriously. On the other hand, from the government side of things, with the exception of this report, which is a combination of government and industry executives who wrote this, we haven't really seen a lot of criticism, explicit direct criticism from government officials of Microsoft. And, you know, that's perhaps a whole separate conversation about why that is. But the short version is essentially the government is very, very reliant on Microsoft and does not want to be openly critical of this major vendor.
And in your article, Eric, you highlighted the recommendations from this new Homeland Security report on the 2023 Chinese attack. The report comes from the Cyber Safety Review Board, and it was released last month. So the CSRB is a public-private partnership where experts get together and kind of do a postmortem, an investigation on cyber attacks. What did the report say about how the attack happened and Microsoft's role in allowing it to happen?
To me, one of the most interesting things is Microsoft still is not exactly sure how the hackers got this sensitive piece of information that they were able to use to basically bluff their way inside the company's networks. Microsoft has put out a blog post essentially saying, here's what we think happened. But part of the CSRB report is about criticizing Microsoft for sort of making it seem like they knew what had happened when in fact they didn't. And Microsoft actually corrected the record just before the report was published to say, we're not sure this is what happened. This is just speculation on our part. But that gets to another thing in the report, which is, the experts are not clear how this happened. What they are clear about is that Microsoft was not truthful in a timely manner about exactly how confident they were that they understood what happened, which is a big deal if you're a customer with Microsoft data to hear that they're still not sure how this happened.
Right. And Quentin, what stands out to you about the Cyber Safety Review Board's analysis?
Well, I think a couple of things are really striking to me. One is when you look at the details of what was compromised, it was a key, basically a way that you create tokens that allow you to authenticate to these various networks. And this key was from 2016, so it's pretty old. The second thing is also that it was a key that was not actually supposed to be able to authenticate to the kinds of servers that it was allowed to authenticate to. So there was clearly some engineering issues there. And as Eric mentioned, the CSRB, the review board, it took Microsoft to task, including going back to 2002 when the founder of Microsoft, Bill Gates, had issued basically an edict to Microsoft saying security was going to be, you know, first consideration in anything we do from now on. It was 22 years ago, and Microsoft went through significant effort to try to implement security, but it appears based on the CSRB's report, there's been significant drift away from that security culture, and that's obviously very concerning that the review board found not just one, but multiple instances of pretty lax security engineering protocols.
And Quentin, in your experience, how does Microsoft's performance against cyber attacks stack up against other major tech companies? Amazon and Google both have large government contracts too.
I'm hesitant to say that anybody does well in this circumstances because you never know what's going to happen. Google, for example, it was also the victim of a pretty significant event back in the mid-2000s, known as Aurora. That led them to make significant change in their security culture. It led them to create a totally different architecture, totally different protocols for accessing network resources, for getting administrative rights and so forth. That's something that they're very much aware of, just like Amazon has seen a number of these instances as well, where that they have to be concerned. So it's striking how much the review board calls out and differentiates what Microsoft had not been doing compared to other cloud service providers like Amazon.
And Eric, you also talked to multiple experts in your reporting, some of whom spoke on condition of anonymity. What concerns did they share about Microsoft security protocols, and what did they say needs to be done?
A big piece of this is really the culture at the company. We've certainly heard a lot recently about the errors, the vulnerabilities themselves, but that comes from a cultural place. As Quentin said, the Bill Gates memo was a seminal moment for Microsoft. And the people I talked to said the company has strayed from that. And this is something that the review board found as well. One of the biggest themes that I heard was Microsoft is prioritizing profits over security. They're charging a lot of money for security features that if you were just a regular person on the street and I told you what this feature was, you would say that should be built in, that should be free, that should be turned on automatically, which is a big thing that the Biden administration is pushing right now. It's called Secure by Design. Microsoft has been accused of essentially flouting these recommendations on a lot of different issues and only changing those under pressure. So that cultural piece is a big part of it.
You're listening to Soundside. I'm Diana Opong, in for Libby Denkman. We're diving into the world of cybersecurity at Microsoft and the company's huge role as a technology provider to the U.S. government, and whether that relationship needs closer scrutiny after several recent breaches by foreign hackers. Joining me for the conversation is journalist Eric Geller, who covers cybersecurity and technology, and Quentin Hodgson, a senior researcher specializing in cybersecurity at RAND. We're going to continue with that concept of commodification of security features. Quentin, one element of Microsoft's business model has been to charge customers a premium for better security features. Last year, the security division at Microsoft passed $20 billion in revenue. Now, some might argue that having a profitable security business would encourage the company to continue to innovate. But it seems troubling that there would be tiers of security for customers based on their ability to pay. Shouldn't keeping systems safe from hackers just be a normal thing at the table for everybody?
Well, I think there certainly needs to be a singular base or a common baseline that you start from of security. But different consumers, different customers will have different needs. The kind of requirements that the government has for securing data or other companies, for example, that have a vested interest in protecting intellectual property are going to be pretty significant. Of course, companies like Microsoft should be doing what they can to secure even individuals' data when they're using Microsoft products. So there has to be some minimal baseline. I wouldn't necessarily say that means that they have to provide, that Microsoft has to provide the highest level of security to everybody, because everybody is going to have slightly different needs.
Does the tiered approach to selling security lead to vulnerability for the companies or government agencies or everyday people?
Well, it certainly puts a big onus on the customer to understand what their own risk profile is, what they might be subject to. And to be honest, even in this day and age, 2024, of almost daily reporting about hacks and so forth, there are a lot of people who just don't understand what the potential threats are, whether as an individual consumer or even some small, medium-sized businesses, even larger businesses who are aware of, they know what cybersecurity is, but they may not be paying as close attention. So it's really hard, especially given how complex these networks have become, how complex and quite frankly, the software has become increasingly bloated, that it's hard to know what the vulnerabilities are until, quite frankly, some adversary or if we're lucky, a researcher who is more responsible discovers them.
And I think it's really hard for consumers to stay up to date when the scams, the hacks are changing, and the evolution of what we're logging into and what we have access to between our computers and our phones is also changing. So it can be really difficult, I think, to stay on top of it all. Eric, how has Microsoft responded to your reporting and the Cyber Safety Review Board's analysis?
Well, the two big themes that we're hearing are, one, we recognize that we have to do better and we are going to do better. And that goes back to the Secure Future Initiative that I mentioned before. The other part of it, though, is really rejecting some of the basic premises in both the report and my story, which you know, sort of play along similar lines. The big one being this question of the security culture. Are Microsoft executives pushing their employees to make security a priority, or do they need to go back to the Bill Gates memo, as the report said? Microsoft rejects the idea that it is not focused enough on security, that it is charging money for security instead of making it something that all of its customers can rely on. This is a big theme of the comments that they provided to me for my story, is over and over they would say, we disagree with that characterization, we reject that premise, to these questions about their security culture.
We also reached out to Microsoft directly and received an extensive statement attributed to Brett Arsenault, Corporate Vice President and Chief Cybersecurity Advisor at the company. He emphasized progress with the Secure Future Initiative Microsoft launched last November. Part of that has been to add, quote, additional security layers for creating digital identities across Microsoft. Quentin, any reaction to Microsoft's big security push?
I would say it's certainly welcome that they're going to refocus. I think the biggest thing is, how sustainable is that going to be? Are we going to be back here in 3, 5, 7 years saying, you know, Microsoft has lapsed back to a less security focused culture? That's the thing, is that I'm sure they will do well, and they're going to implement a number of procedures and policies over the coming months, if they haven't already, to try to address this. But it's really hard to sustain that focus. And that's going to be the key thing to look for, is Microsoft going to sustain this focus over the long term?
And Eric, you reported there are some vocal critics of the U.S. government's reliance on Microsoft. Some call it a monoculture. Are there any significant voices asking for these huge contracts to be reviewed in light of the security lapses?
Yeah, so I got comments for my story from a couple of U.S. senators, Ron Wyden from Oregon, Democrat, Eric Schmidt from Missouri, Republican, both of them very concerned about the government's reliance on Microsoft. They're not saying the government should stop using Microsoft products. They are saying the government should diversify, for example, its email platforms, its word processing platforms. They don't want it to be the case that a hacker can break into one system and cripple an entire function of the U.S. government because we're using one company for that function. And in fact, Senator Wyden has introduced a bill that would essentially say to the government, you can't continue to buy services from companies that make it hard for you to use multiple companies at once, multiple companies' products. This is something Microsoft has been accused of, is trying to create a walled garden. Much like the Apple App Store, it's very difficult to use apps that are not in that store. Microsoft, it makes it very difficult to integrate other companies' products inside of their environment. Microsoft has denied this characterization, but I've certainly heard it from a lot of people. The push from Senator Wyden is really about trying to break down that walled garden and tell Microsoft, you can't continue to be a huge government vendor if you're not willing to make it easier to work with other companies.
Right. And Quentin, what kind of oversight do you think is needed here?
Oh, well, that's an interesting question, because, of course, I'm hopeful that the senators like Senator Wyden will maintain the focus on this, to keep both the private sector's feet to the fire, but also the federal government on this. We have a very disaggregated system across the federal government about how IT is acquired and managed. The Cybersecurity Infrastructure Security Agency, which is the cyber component of the Department of Homeland Security, they have responsibility for helping secure a vast array of different government agencies. And some of them, they're as large as the State Department, with, you know, 250 embassies and consulates around the world that they have to worry about, down to very small micro agencies. And that's a difficult thing to manage across all those various pieces.
Eric, Microsoft has an extensive network of lobbyists and people who manage government relations. How does that affect accountability and oversight?
So one of the things I heard from many people from my story is Microsoft is very slick when it comes to positioning itself as a friendly partner to the government. They like to say that they share, all kinds of information about what they're seeing on Windows computers around the world, and that helps the government track, Russian, Chinese, Iranian hackers. They're also big on sort of funding these campaigns and projects for cyber peace around the world. To a certain extent, these are valuable efforts, and a lot of experts will say Microsoft's security teams are top-notch. But there's also an element of PR here. Microsoft is trying to position itself as a good guy, as a team player, trying to insulate itself, according to the folks I've spoken to, from government criticism. And they're winning in large part because, particularly the folks in the Biden administration right now, they don't want to call out one company. They don't want to criticize one company. They see that as antithetical to the spirit of kumbaya teamwork that cybersecurity is all about. And Microsoft has really been able to play on that very effectively.
Well, I think the other thing to add, just noting that Microsoft has been a team player in other ways as well. In the immediate aftermath or the start of the pandemic, for example, back in 2020, Microsoft stepped up and provided additional capabilities to the government, for example, and to others. Things like instances of Microsoft Teams to do collaborative work to facilitate work from home. So Microsoft has been doing those kinds of things as well, obviously with the hope of transitioning everybody to a paying commercial customer later on. And they are not alone in having pretty slick lobbying operations in Washington, D.C. All the tech companies are represented there, whether through trade industry associations, but also some of the major players have significant presences.
And Quentin, what do you think it's going to take to make the changes necessary to fix the problems we're discussing today, from the culture to the actual security issues? And how do you think the U.S. government should be adapting?
Well, I think it takes sustained leadership focus, both from the government side as well as the private sector. Having been in this space for over a dozen years now, it's constantly surprising that we seem to be surprised by the hacks that are happening and the incidents that are happening. And it always leads to a flurry of activity in the immediate aftermath. But the challenge, as I mentioned before, is how do you sustain that effort over the long term? And how do you try to anticipate what might be coming down the pipe, like not just what you've seen in the past? And that's going to be both having the agility in government, but also the private sector to step up and understand. And this is hard for them, of course, because they're responsible to their shareholders, that security is an important part of their product, and it shouldn't just be seen as a cost center.
I think this is just one high-profile example of the big shift that we're seeing the government try to undertake right now, which is moving the burden of cybersecurity off of regular folks like you and me and onto companies like Microsoft that have the technical and financial ability to fight these hackers before they get into our emails so that we don't have to keep worrying about applying the latest patch and changing our password every month. The administration has a national cyber strategy, and one key piece of it is this idea of corporate responsibility for cybersecurity. And what this Microsoft incident is showing us is that it's not going to be easy to get these big companies to take on more responsibility.
And Eric, is there anything that people should be thinking about, knowing about as it relates to Microsoft and the US cybersecurity?
I think the big thing is if you use a Windows computer, make sure your automatic updates are on, because when something like this is discovered and Microsoft pushes a patch, you do not want to be sitting out there with a computer that has updates turned off because you will be vulnerable. So if I could say anything, I will take this moment to plug that. Keep your automatic updates on because they do find these problems eventually and they do fix them.
And Quentin, what are you going to be looking out for as cybersecurity issues continue to grow and problems try to be solved?
I think it's two things. One is will be, of course, what does that sustained focus look like over time? And is Microsoft, for example, going to update us as they do more forensics to figure out what happened, but also what their plan is to implement change? I should also note that just because this is happening in Microsoft today doesn't mean it's not going to happen to somebody else tomorrow. So simply switching, for example, to using the Google suite of tools is not a panacea for this problem, which is not to say that Google is not doing all it can to try to secure its products and services. But diversification sounds great, but it doesn't eliminate risk.
Quentin Hodgson is a senior researcher specializing in cybersecurity at RAND, a nonpartisan research organization. And Eric Geller is a journalist covering cybersecurity and technology and the author of The U.S. Government Has a Microsoft Problem in Wired Magazine. Thank you both so much for this conversation.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks for listening to Soundside. This show is only possible because listeners support us. If you're able to give right now, please check out the show notes for a link to donate. And don't forget, you can listen live on KUOW 94.9 FM Seattle at noon and 8 p.m. Monday through Thursday, or anytime online at KUOW.org.
Seattle in the 90s. A tidal wave of iconic music roars out of this sleepy city and launches a pop culture revolution. Here's a story you haven't heard. Let the Kids Dance is a new podcast about the rise and fall of Seattle's teen dance ordinance, the law that made it illegal for young people to go to concerts. A story of moral panic, grassroots activism, and an unstoppable music community that fought for its freedom. Listen to Let the Kids Dance from KUOW and the NPR Network.